Good evening. Welcome to the Spring 2017 Green Living Seminar Series at the Massachusetts College of Liberal Arts. This annual lecture series is funded by the MCLA's Academic Affairs, the Environmental Studies Department, and donors to the MCLA Foundation. Tonight is the conclusion of our spring lecture series, The Science and Management of Invasive Species. Over the course of this semester, we've learned from various experts from state and federal agencies, academia, nonprofits, and private Massachusetts Department of Conservation and Recreation for 32 years. He is currently the Forest Health Program Director. His talk tonight is titled, The Current Forest Health Conditions in Massachusetts. Please help me welcome Ken to MCLA.
Thank you. So just right off the bat, I want to say that some of these things that I'm talking about are although in some areas they might be considered invasive, they are not invasive in terms of they're not foreign to this country. But they can reach epidemic levels, and as I get into the talk, you'll hear more about that. But the majority of the things I am going to talk about are non-native pests, whether they're diseases or insects that have affected the forest here in Massachusetts. And this isn't all, some people say that all I talk about is doom and gloom. And unfortunately, there is a lot of issues going on in our forest right now. And throughout my history of working through the state, I've seen things actually getting progressively worse. Some of this might be due to climate. Some of it, actually the majority of it, is due to trade and what we bring into this country. So I'll get into what's going on. So we get a lot of funding, quite a bit of funding, from the U.S. Forest Service. That's a USDA, U.S. Department of Agriculture. And we also get funding from APHIS. So you'll hear me talk about the Forest Service, and you'll hear me talk about APHIS. And APHIS is the Animal Plant Health Inspection Service. So APHIS actually is the ones that if you go out of the country and you come back in and they ask if you've brought anything into the country, agricultural things, that's APHIS. And Homeland Security actually is APHIS's boss. So just so you get a background of what's happening with the people that fund us. I'm going to go back on this just a bit here because I've kind of went ahead on my talk. If I can get it to go back, okay, and start all over again. So what this is, if you've watched this, it's a progression. We do aerial survey each year. We get funded from the Forest Service to do this. And you'll see the map. It kind of lights up and it gives you the statewide damage acres. This is what we have mapped over since for the last 10 years, from 96 to 2016, and it shows you acres. So things go up, things go down, things go up, things go down. And this just happens to be different pests, different diseases, things that we map from the air. Again, as I mentioned, we get funding from the foresters. We do this each year. We go up in a little Cessna airplane and we map the whole state. We're one of the few states in the country that map the entire state. The only thing we don't map is in around Logan Airport because they won't let us in their airspace. But as you can see here, as if you're looking at this map, all the different pests that are at the bottom of the page there, those are the things that we map an area and then we come in and we ground truth it to figure out what is going on there. And as I mentioned, a lot of these pests that we do map, they are native. They're things that actually reach a level where they cause defoliation, and it's something that we map, and it can cause harm to the forest. There are native insects that can cause harm. The reason why we're worried about the exotic non-native insects is because, and you'll hear me talk about this as we go along, is that they don't come here to this country with their enemies, the predators and prey that goes after those invasives. They don't come with the invasive insect or disease that comes here. So it's our job, or it's all of our jobs to actually to know and recognize the invasives, because what we're trying to do is limit the damage that they do in this country. And I'll talk about the major ones that are affecting Massachusetts and the whole country. So this is last year's aerial survey, and you'll see it's pretty widespread. It's the most acreage that we have mapped since 1981, 363,000 acres of defoliation. The majority of this has been caused by gypsy moth, and I'm sure everybody's heard about gypsy moth. Gypsy moth is like the catch-all for any insect that's out there. People say, oh, it's gypsy moth every time they see a caterpillar. Most of the time it isn't, but gypsy moth is an insect that causes major defoliation and when it gets to an outbreak stage. So as you see there, the majority of this damage is east of the Connecticut River. with the, most of it east of Route 495 and in, on the South Shore. And you'll see, if you think about what was mapped before, when I showed you on those maps, the majority of the damage that we see in the state happens to be in the southeast, and that could be soil, it could be tree species, it could be the climate in an area where it's a lot warmer, warms up faster in the southeast of Massachusetts. So all these things factor into why that area seems to get hit harder than anywhere else in the state. But we do see damage out in the Berkshires, and we've had some major outbreaks out here in the Berkshires of several different diseases and insects. So one of the reasons why gypsy moth was so bad last year was because of drought. So we've gone through three pretty serious droughts here in Massachusetts over the past three summers, spring and summers. And there's a fungus that that is effective that was, actually this fungus is non-native. It's called Entomophaga mammaga, and I'll talk a little bit more about that. But Entomophaga mammaga is the limiting factor that's helped keep gypsy moth in check over the last, since early 1980s. It was initially introduced into this country in the early 1900s and never ever took hold. But 1981, 1982, they finally discovered it. They finally found that it was actually starting to work. And it wasn't, they actually reintroduced it in the late 1980s. And then from that point forward, Entomophaga mammaga has been what has limited gypsy moth infestations. So a little bit about Entomophaga. So Entomophaga fungi are soil-borne fungi. They're in the soil, they're naturally occurring. There's a lot of native Entomophaga fungi that keep some of our native pests in check. So there's a lot of different Entomophaga fungi, but the mammaga fungi, Entomophaga mammaga, is specific to gypsy moth and limiting that. So if you had it, or if you're from Eastern Mass, or if you've had a chance to see some major gypsy moth defoliation, this is what you see. You see the female doesn't fly. The female and male larvae feed in the tree, heavy feeding. They are emerging right now. They just emerged. Actually, we got the first report of emergence yesterday. That was in Belchertown in the Connecticut River Valley. And so they feed heavy for about a month, beginning of June. Second week of June, they pupate. Those are the pictures on the right. You see those little brown pupate cases. Is everybody familiar with metamorphosis, complete metamorphosis? You all know that. I don't need to explain that. Okay. So it is a complete metamorphosis, this insect. And it goes from egg to hatches out into a larvae. There's five instars. The major stages of feeding are the second to the fifth instar. It pupates, and then it emerges. The female comes out of the pupa case, doesn't move, stays there. They're flightless. Even though they have wings, they're flightless. And the males are the ones that fly around. So if you are out there in July and you see all these brown moths fluttering around, that's more than likely it's gypsy moth. It was very common in Eastern Mass on the Cape, on the islands, Martha's Vineyard. So, and we're expecting a serious infestation this year, more widespread than last year. Probably well over 350,000 acres that we saw last year. We'll probably see, we're predicting double that in terms of acreage defoliated this year. So if you're from Eastern Mass, you're going to see gypsy moth pretty bad again. That's because that Entomophaga fungus, which has helped to keep it in check, was not around and hasn't been around. It needs the moisture that we're having right now is actually helping, hopefully, to bring the that fungal pathogen back up to levels where it'll affect the gypsy moth larvae. Again, the life stages, complete metamorphosis, I already mentioned that, and the egg mass is very, it's about the size of a quarter, most of them, butterscotch color, and it's pretty easy to see. You'll see them all over trees on the bark. They like bark crevices, so they're pretty evident if you know what to look for. And the effects, the picture on the upper left there is the Quabbin Reservoir in the central part of the state, and that has been hit hard for the last 4 years. Those islands have been completely defoliated. The picture on the upper right is out on the Cape. The lower left is on Miles Standish State Forest in Plymouth. And in that area, it got hit so hard for so many years that they're actually feeding on conifers now, the white pines. And if you're familiar with how a conifer grows, if it gets completely defoliated, unlike a deciduous tree, it will die. It doesn't refoliate. Deciduous trees with leaves, and tolerate some defoliation, you know, 2 to 3 defoliations, and not succumb to that, where pine trees, if they get completely defoliated, will die. So we are actually starting to see some mortality at Miles Standish in Plymouth and in that whole area down there in around Plymouth being caused by gypsy moth, repeated defoliation by gypsy moth, and now them getting into the pines. And the lower right is actually out on the National Seashore out in Truro. So that the Outer Cape is actually has multiple problems, not just gypsy moth going on. So if you get out to the Cape, you'll see the trees out there aren't doing too good. So there are natural controls, predators, birds, small mammals, and other insects, some native, some non-native, that have been released here over the years that feed on gypsy moth. Some feed on the egg stage. They're predators on the egg stage. And most of those are wasps, Hymenopterum wasps, that feed on, they actually deposit their egg into the egg of the gypsy moth and feed it from the inside out. There's a virus called MPV, nuclear polyhedrosis virus, that keeps the gypsy moth at large-scale gypsy moth populations. The MPV virus actually kicks in, and we haven't seen that yet. We're hoping to see that kick in this year because it'll be a large population of gypsy moth. And then the Mimega fungal disease affects all stages of the caterpillar in the larval stage. And there's a long history here, and I'm not going to get into this because I have a lot more to talk about. But in 1869, it was brought in by Professor Leopold Truvolo into Medford, Mass. It actually, gypsy moth started here in Massachusetts. It was brought in as a silk moth. At the time, silk was the big thing. It's like the polypropylene or the smart wool of today, but everybody wanted silk as long underwear. And it was brought in as they were testing it to see if it would make a good silkworm. And it escaped when they found, you let it go thinking it wasn't going to be a problem. And by 1905, it started defoliating large areas of oak trees and around the Boston area. And it was in the early 1900s that they finally figured out, every city and town in Massachusetts, large-scale defoliation. In the early 1920s, they knew that they actually had to do something, so they started using pretty toxic pesticides to control it. But they never, ever were able to get a hold of it. When DDT came out in the 1946, when they first started using it, that was when they started thinking, okay, we're going to be able to control this. But then, you all know about DDT, so they stopped using it. And then gypsy moth just gradually started spreading. So it's pretty much everywhere east, not quite east of the Mississippi, but it has spread steadily across the eastern part of the country. The U.S. Forest Service has spent millions and millions of dollars trying to slow the spread of this insect, and they still are. The money has gone down, but they're still spending millions of dollars per year on a program called Slow the Spread, where they go out and release, there's insect pheromones that actually slow the spread of this insect, and they do a lot of trapping, a lot of monitoring for the insect. And here in the state, we haven't done much. The last time we sprayed, and we would use a biological control, Bacillus thuringiensis, if we are going to spray, but the last time we did that was 1984. And people want us to spray, but they don't realize if we are going to spray, being a public agency, the only thing we would spray would be public lands. And we're not at that point now where we're seeing the amount of mortality that we're, and we're also, with these natural enemies, Entomophaga mimega, we're hoping that kicks in so we don't have to spray, because spraying is even though we're using a biological control, it's very controversial and very, very expensive. So that was the major topic, the major cause of defoliation over the last couple years. I'm going to get into, there's a whole bunch of other ones I'm going to talk about. I'm going to talk about them fast. And these are ones, again, most of them are non-native. There's one major one that I'm going to spend a little bit of time, that's Asian longhorn beetle. If you haven't heard of Asian longhorn beetle, that is an insect we're actually trying to eradicate. And the USDA APHIS is spending millions and millions of dollars right now in 3 locations in the United States to eradicate Asian longhorn beetle. I'll get into that in a minute. So black oak gall wasp, the name has changed to Zapatella davisae. We saw this about 5 years ago. We weren't sure what it was. We brought in the U.S. Forest Service. We brought in UMass entomology program because it was actually starting to kill wide-scale killing of oaks which are already being hit by other things on Cape Cod and Martha's Vineyard, and that is specifically hitting black oak trees. As you can see by the map here, we've mapped it since 2012. Most of that in the Falmouth area, a lot of it out in Chatham, Orleans, Brewster, out on the Outer Cape, and Martha's Vineyard in Oak Bluffs, Vineyard Haven has been hit really, really hard. So a lot of tree mortality. It causes the swelling of the terminal growth on the tree because the insect gets in there and there's thousands of them in the little teeny twigs. What it does is they get in there and they basically girdle the twig, so you have no elongation, no new growth, and the tree tries to compensate for that by putting out a flush of growth. But eventually, with all the other factors that are going on that affect trees, trees are always being affected by multiple things. The tree is just so stressed it can't, it just succumbs to, the multiple factors. Usually by the time we get there and we see it, is everybody familiar with armillaria root rot or shoestring root rot, which is a naturally occurring decay fungi in the soil? So that's always there. It acts as a decay agent when any woody plant dies. Well, armillaria will actually start to colonize the roots, and it's the demise of the tree because the trees are so weak and they can't fight it off. As you look in the lower left there, you can actually see the insect's head popping out of the twig there. That's a picture taken by the Forest Service. And unfortunately, because this insect is there and the trees are weakened, another factor is this Diplodia corticola. The Forest Service entomology and pathology people went down there and they found this fungal pathogen in there. And it's basically secondary, but it's on a lot of the oak trees that are being affected by the gypsy moth and the black oak gall wasp. And it's pretty much girdling the trees, finishing them off because the trees are too weak to fight it off. Emerald ash borer, I don't know how many of you have heard about this. This is another major pest in our country now. So this is one of the other major ones besides Asian longhorn beetle that the USDA has spent a lot of money on trying to slow the spread. We're not going to eradicate emerald ash borer. We found it here in Massachusetts in 2012. We did get funding from APHIS to do monitoring for it with purple traps. At one point, we had about 900 traps a year out there. They look like kites hanging up in the tree, and we used that to monitor for the insect to see if it was here in state. It was initially found in 2008 out in the Detroit, Michigan area. So it spread rapidly across the country. Again, egg, larvae, pupae, adult. The larval stage is what does the majority of the feeding. It's a cambium feeder. That means it feeds on the inner bark. It's a rapid tree killer because it feeds. If you're familiar with how a tree grows, it grows on the inner bark, the cambium area. That's where this insect feeds. All buprestids are cambium feeders. The thing about emerald ash borer is it's so hard to identify because it eats within the bark, underneath the bark in that cambium layer, so it's by the time you find it, it's too late, the tree is almost dead. It is mostly being spread by people. It doesn't spread that far by natural spread. It spreads about half a mile a year on its own. It does fly. But people moving firewood. Ash is a prime firewood and also a prime timber species. Most baseball bats are made out of ash wood. So right now it's been found in 30 states, continues to be spread rapidly. We initially found it here in Berkshire County in the town of Dalton. Then we found it in multiple areas, Pittsfield, Lanesboro. It's pretty much radiated out from that initial find from 2012 here in Massachusetts. Now we found it in eastern part of the state. We found it in Boston. We found it in Worcester. We found it in the Connecticut River Valley. Most of the areas that we're finding it are due to people moving wood, and primarily it's people in the green industry, so landscapers, the arborists, the turf people, who always move wood around all the time. I mean, people move firewood too. That's why if you go anywhere now to go camping and you try to bring your own firewood with you, most states ban the outside firewood into their states and into their campgrounds. We have a firewood ban in our campgrounds. But you can't go to Maine, New Hampshire, Vermont, Rhode Island, Connecticut with outside firewood. They don't allow you. And if they catch you, the fines are huge. So don't try it. That's all because of the two pests, emerald ash borer and Asian longhorn beetle. The states are scared of getting those pests and spreading it even further. So the progression here, as I mentioned already, you can go by the years 2012, where it first got found in Dalton and Pittsfield, and then last year we found it in Wilbraham, Long Meadow, up in Newton, and up in Boxford, up in Essex County. And what do we do about it? We get no funding. We used to get some funding. We get no funding at all for Amonash Borer now. That's all on the state. The USDA just decided, okay, well, there's nothing we can do about it. We're not going to fund you anymore. So what we do is there's methods to monitor. One is on the right-hand picture there where you see that sign, notice sign. You purposely go out and you girdle a tree, you stress it out, and the tree, Amonash Borer is attracted to that. Then we go and cut it down, and we girdle the trees in the early spring in March. We go in October, we cut it down, and we peel the whole tree looking for the larvae. And we do that in a radius around known infestation. So we'll go out anywhere from 5 to 10 miles from a known infestation, girdle trees in a radius, cut them down, peel them, and every time we've done that, it's progressing. It's progressing on its own. So we haven't found it out at the 10-mile mark, but we generally find it in the 5-mile radius mark. And then we also, I can't say they don't fund us. They do give us traps, but they don't give us money to do the work anymore. So they have given us some of these traps. The green funnel trap in the middle is the most it's the most efficacious. It works the best. The purple panel traps really don't work that well, so we don't really use them that much anymore. And there is actually a native wasp. It's a predatory wasp. It's a buprestid hunter. All they do is, as I mentioned, Amonash Borer is a buprestid and cambium feeder. But this native wasp called Cerceris fumipennis is a way to monitor for Amonash Borer. And we have volunteers that go out. We ask people to help us. And they go out onto basically baseball fields, soccer fields, anywhere where there's hard-packed sand. That's where this wasp makes its nest, and it tries to feed its young. It brings buprestids back. It's a buprestid hunter. So we go out the first week of July, for the first 2 weeks of July, and we sit around baseball fields, soccer fields, and we actually watch this wasp, watch for it, and see what it brings back. And that tells us whether or not Amonash Borer is there in that area. And this actually helped us find 3 new locations here in state, and multiple locations in Connecticut, multiple locations infestation areas up in New Hampshire. So it is a very good way to monitor for the insect. And how we're dealing with this now, so in terms of living with non-native insects, the only thing that we can do, as I mentioned in the start of my talk, was that when these insects or diseases come here, they don't come here with their enemies, where the natives have co-evolved with their natural enemies that help keep them in check. So the non-natives don't come here with any kind of enemies that help keep them in check from their native range. So the USDA APHIS has provided us with these 2 different biological controls. One is Trastocus plantipennisi. It's the most effective. And there's another one. These are the numbers that we released last year. They come in these little, like, fribble cups, plastic cups. And you get thousands of them in the cup, and you release them on several trees. Or they come on the lower right. You'll see that ash tree with a little teeny bolt of wood on it. They come as larvae in that bolt, and we nail that onto the tree, and they get released that way. The other one is an egg parasitoid. It actually lays its egg. It's a little Hymenopteron moth that lays its egg into the egg of the EAB. And it comes in that, what they do is they take old pill bottles, turn them upside down, and put the egg of the Ubius in there. And when it hatches, it goes out and works its way. It can actually find EAB eggs on the bark of the ash tree. And there's a new one that that we're hoping to get released here in state. It's been released in New Hampshire. It's been released in New York. It's called Spathius galinae, which is it's much more acclimated to our climate. The other 2, we haven't had much success in relocating them here, and it could be due to our climate being too cold. So I'm going to get off exotic here and talk a little bit about a native. So southern pine beetle, though not native to Massachusetts, is native to this country. And this is related to climate. We've actually, they found southern pine beetle, it's been in the south for many, many years. It's been slowly working its way north. It was found in New Jersey back in the late 70s, early 80s, out in the pine barrens of New Jersey, killing major amounts of trees, mostly 2 and 3 needle pines, pitch pines. And then just 2 years ago, 2014, they found it on Long Island, New York. killing large amounts of pitch pine out there. And at that time, the Forest Service gave us some traps and some lure and said, okay, we want you to trap here in Massachusetts. We trapped in 2015, we trapped last year, and both years in all the locations that we trapped, we found southern pine beetle. It isn't at the level that it's killing trees. Well, what has to happen with southern pine beetle, it has multiple generations per year, but it has to have it has to actually have those multiple generations per year to overcome the defenses of the tree. Because a conifer tree, when it gets attacked, it pitches out, it produces pitch, and they're always being attacked by native insects and bark beetles and wood borers, but the pitch, actually, if the tree is healthy, will keep that tree healthy and not succumb to the attacks from those insects. When the southern pine beetle attacks, it's very, very aggressive. So it can have up to 8 generations per year. So if it gets more than 2 generations per year and it attacks these conifer trees, it will actually overcome the defenses of the tree, and then it can kill it. So in Long Island, they know now that it had 4 generations per year, and that's just an indication that it's getting warmer. You know, the climate is changing. No matter what people say, the climate is changing, and we know that by, you know, the weather data that's out there. We know that we're accumulating more and more warmer days. So the same thing could be happening here in Massachusetts. You know, southern pine beetle was, we've trapped for insects year after year. We've run different trapping programs for the Forest Service and APHIS, and never had southern pine beetle. Now we're actually starting to see it in our traps. So we're going to trap again this year. We have 30 traps out. What we're really concerned about is the Cape and Martha's Vineyard in Nantucket, because that's a major, if you're familiar with the Cape, the major tree species out there is pitch pine. It's a big part of the ecosystem out there. And plus the fact if you start having all these trees die, it's a huge fire hazard. And if you're familiar with the fires that are going on out west, they are mostly being caused by dendrocnidous beetles are mountain pine beetle, western conifer beetle, they're all dendrocnidous beetles. And the same thing is happening out west. Those are native beetles out there, but the climate is changing, it's getting warmer, so they're having multiple generations, and that's why they're killing wide-scale amounts of conifers out there. So just so you're aware, southern pine beetle, even though it's not, it is a native, not to Massachusetts, but native to this country, it is a major problem, and we're deeply concerned about southern pine beetle getting established here in Massachusetts. Here's some of the pictures of the damage. Again, feeds in the cambium area, rapid tree killer, multiple generations per year. It basically forms these, if you look at the picture on the left, looks like popcorn on the tree, all along the trunk, up and down the bole of the tree. And what we're doing is those traps in the picture on the right, you'll see these black funnel traps. If you're out on the Cape, more than likely you'll see some of these traps out if you're out on the National Seashore, because we're gonna have 30 traps out there. And these are our results from last year. We see the positive traps, and we only got we put 20 traps out last year. 5 of them came in positive. The year before in 2015, 10 of them came in positive. And I mentioned about temperature. You know, the prediction is steady progression over the next, 20 to 30 years of temperature. So one of the things you can do, but it's controversial, if you look at the upper picture, is you can really thin out your stands. That makes it less attractive to southern pine beetle. But the bottom picture is how it is in our state. And I just want to mention that, our state happens to be anti-cut. A lot of people are anti-cut. But sometimes you need to cut trees to manage them in order to keep them healthy. So Asian longhorn beetle, I know I'm getting short on time here, but I'll go through this quickly. So that was initially found in August of 2008. It was brought in on packing material. Probably, we know it came in from China. We bring in a lot of trade from China. Initially, we found it in Worcester. We know where it came into in Worcester. It probably was there for at least 10, 15 years before we found it in 2008. Again, complete metamorphosis. The damage in the middle there, you'll see it makes these egg-laying sites. That's what that arrows are pointed to in the middle picture there, in the upper middle. It's very, very hard to spot. We have full-time staff. We actually get funded. Last year in Massachusetts, it was $13 million the USDA put into the state. $4 million of those came to DCR, my agency. I have staff that works for me full-time in Worcester. All they do is monitor for Asian longhorn beetle. So I have 35 staff, tree climbers and ground surveyors and wood disposal people in Worcester that USDA funds us to do. We're partners with the USDA APHIS to do this work. So the USDA is very strongly advocating for the eradication. It's also found in Ohio. It's in New York City out on Long Island, and I have 20 minutes. So I'll have to go through. So it does. There's 12 species that it affects. Maple is the major one that it affects, but maple, birch, elm, and willow are the four major ones that we see here in the state that are getting infected by Asian longhorn beetle. The damage that it causes. Why is this a major problem? Because it affects maple mostly. That's we're deeply concerned about that. Maple sugar, the timber values, all that. You can see on the bottom left what it does to the inside of a tree. It's not a cambium feeder. It eats the inside of the tree out. It totally eats the wood. When we first got to Worcester, we could walk up the trees and push them over, large trees, because they ate the insides right out of them. As an adult, it does maturation feeding. It feeds on the veins of the leaves. That's the lower right-hand picture there. What are we doing right now? We do infected host tree removal. So if the tree has any signs of infestation, the tree is gone. We have the right to do that. We take the tree down. We've taken down many, many thousands of trees in Worcester County. Just in Worcester alone, probably 30,000 trees. There's some neighborhoods there that were all Norway maples. We've taken every single tree down in their neighborhood. We have replanted, but it's kind of devastating when we first got in there. A lot of that work is done with cranes. The two pictures on the right, we're doing wide whole host tree removal in forested areas because it's been found in the forest. We're the only place in the country that has it in the forest. We're very concerned about that. There's whole neighborhoods, as I mentioned, where the trees are gone. So there's ongoing survey, the tree climbers, the ground surveyors. We're not finding the level of infestation that on the bottom right, as you see there, where heavy infestation. Right now we're at the level where it's like finding a needle in a haystack, which is good. We're doing our jobs. We're getting there. But still, there's still trees that are infested out there that we have to find. And last year, in 2015, we did complete a full cycle of we looked at every single host tree within that whole 110 square mile quarantine area. Now we're on the second cycle of survey. We have to have three negative cycles of non-finds to declare eradicated. So this is what we did last year, full host removal on 56 acres and 90 infested trees, which is a lot different than the first year where we took down probably 15,000 infested trees in 2009. We also get funding from the U.S. Forest Service to run a trapping program, which has helped us find a lot of the infestation in low-level areas, and we're continuing to do that. Hemlock woolly adelgid is another invasive insect that's out there in our hemlocks. It's present in every county in the state. It hasn't gotten to the level where it's killed trees like it has to the south of us, and that's probably because we're in the area where it can be buffered by the cold. Even though I mentioned that we are getting warmer, we have had several instances where it got really cold in the wintertime, where it got to well below zero over two or three days. That really knocks the populations back of hemlock woolly adelgid, so that has helped us. But they rebound really quickly. They're asexual. They're all females. They don't need to be impregnated. They impregnate themselves, and they have two stages, the cisterns and the progridians. If you look at this chart here, so they have two stages where the adult females lay their eggs, so they can rapidly reproduce even if their populations get knocked back. 2 years ago, 95% of them were killed by the cold weather. And this year, we do a study for the Forest Service where we go out and check the amounts that are out there, and they've rebounded incredibly. Just from last winter, it wasn't cold. It never got below zero. So. And we have released biological controls. Neither one of these two, Laricobius nigrinus or Pseudoscimbus decubii, have taken hold. We haven't been able to recover them, so we know that it was kind of a waste. Our climate is too cold for them to get established. We're working on this one, Laricobius osakensis, to see if the Forest Service will provide us this insect, because it's actually from northern areas of Japan that are more acclimated to our climate. Hemlocks so far are also being affected by other native things, hemlock looper, different fungal diseases. Elongated hemlock scale actually is one of the worst things that's happening to them, and that's the picture there on in the middle picture there. That's a non-native, but there's no funding to do anything about that, but that is actually causing a lot of damage on the hemlocks right now. And white pine defoliation, there's been multiple fungal pathogens affecting the white pine. This one, Lacanosticta acicola, is one. It's a needle cast disease that we're seeing a lot of, causing thinning of the pines. The picture right there that you see, the upper picture, shows that's actually around the Quabbin Reservoir, where a lot of the pines are so thinned out they're only holding this year's needles. The picture below that is actually the symptom on the needle. It's a needle cast. You see the little black spots. Those are the sporing stage where it produces millions of spores that go out and spread. The thing that is good is last year we went through drought, well, actually a couple years of drought, and diseases need cold. Actually, what we're having right now is really good for diseases. They spread in this type of weather. Cloudy, cool, wet days, moisture, a lot of moisture is not good for disease. It's actually good for diseases to spread. Unfortunately, the white pines have gotten weakened, and again, this is a secondary thing. Calitiopsis canker comes in there and causes these cankers, and we're not sure if this is going to be a problem. We have been seeing it in more and more areas, so we are monitoring that to see if it actually is. One of the reasons why we're monitoring and we're concerned about it is it affects the quality of the timber. So white pine is our major timber species here in the state. It's what we sell most private and public on our forest lands is white pine. So if this Calitiopsis canker gets worse, it'll degrade the timber, and a lot of it we won't be able to sell. A couple more things. Again, I want to go back to we do an aerial survey each year. So if you know Mount Washington down in the southwest corner of the state, there's an area, it's called Alander Mountain down there in Mount Washington State Forest, if you get a chance to hike in there. Each year, we've been mapping an area that's been progressively getting worse down there. And it's had multiple factors. It's had a hailstorm, anthracnose, leaf disease, pear thrips, different things have happened down in that area where we've mapped it over a period of 10 years. And what we found is this, I mentioned armillaria root rot. That's this disease right here. It's called shoestring root rot. Well, it's affecting every species down there. It's actually become like a sink for armillaria. It's really cool to go up in that area. You'll see every single tree in 500 acres dead from this disease. I mean, it's not cool, but I mean, it's kind of neat to watch the progression. And you can actually see the edges of where the disease is in this area. So if you ever get a chance to go to Mount Washington, hike the Alander Mountain Trail and go off to the left, you'll see there's a bunch, 500 acres of dead trees. It's this disease, which is, generally a secondary pathogen, but it's because of all these multiple factors affecting the forest in that area, it's taken hold and it's become the primary mortality factor now. That's all I have. If there's any questions. All right, thank you.
I'll go ahead. So can private landowners take their own property on their lands? Could they spray for pests or release biocontrol agents?
Yeah, you can hire, are you talking about for gypsy moth or any pest? So there are a lot of people spraying for gypsy moth. They're mostly doing it in the east because that's where it's a major factor. You can hire an arborist. We recommend a certified arborist to do that. We recommend using BT, biological control. There is one property. It's I don't know if I can give the name, but there is one major private property owner that's aerial spraying down on the South Shore. Pretty major acreage. They have to go through our Department of Agriculture and us. They have to have, if there's a whole process they have to go through. You have to notify, there's a notification procedure. It's all part of the Mass General laws. There's this whole process of things you have to do aerial spraying.
And to follow up on that, can DCR operate without approval of USDA, or like if you want to release a biocontrol species, can you do that? Does it have to be approved by USDA, or what's that relationship?
Well, it depends. We actually have, well, for all the ones that we have released, we actually have to go through APHIS. It's called a PPQ 391. We have to have a permit from them to get it here in state, for them to ship it to us, and then they give us that permit, and that means we can release it. So we have a permit to release the emerald ash borer biocontrols. We have a permit to release the hemlock woolly-adelgid biocontrols. There's another permit that we're not working on. But I didn't mention winter moth, if you're familiar with winter moth, which is another real serious invasive. But there's a fly called the Sizenus albicans that is being released in state. And they've had great success with Sizenus albicans. I don't know if anybody talked about that in some of the previous talks. But you had to have a permit to release that. That actually came from British Columbia. They brought the fly from British Columbia in Canada.
Okay.
and barista here.
I want to ask about the Asian longhorn beetle, with the goal being eradication. Is that eradication in the state or across
the country?
Okay, and so how are other states doing with their...
Well, it was eradicated in New Jersey. It was we had it in Boston. We eradicated that part, and we declared it eradicated in Boston. New York has been a long, long struggle, and a lot of that is actually mostly was a bunch of different factors. It's difficult to get around in New York. It's difficult to hire people to work down there to do this work. It's difficult because if you're familiar with the New York City area, there's a lot of trees in people's backyards that you don't have access to, and it takes a while to get permission to get in there. So it's just been a really, really long process. And Ohio is the newest find. That was found in 2010. And the way to say this correctly, that the people out there are fighting the state and the USDA. They don't like the government. So they've made it really, really difficult to have access on people's land. Even though as state and federal agencies, we have laws that allow us to do that, it's just been very difficult out in the Ohio area.
I wanted to ask a clarifying question about that. So when you were taking out 30,000 trees in Worcester County, so
yeah.
Were those on private lands as well?
Mostly on private.
And so is that just the jurisdiction of DCR to go and take out the tree?
Yep.
Without...
And we have...
Under the Mass General Laws, there's different chapters... if you want me to tell you all the chapters, but there's different parts of the Mass General Laws that gives us the right to access private land, gives us the right, if we deem it a pest of concern, to either spray it or prune it or remove it. We have the right to do that as a state agency. And then the federal government supersedes all of our laws. They have even more rights to do, because you're trying to protect agriculture, you're trying to protect the big picture.
So, from the private landowner's perspective, are there notification requirements, or do they just come out one day and find you took off?
No, we don't just go in and take it. We notify. It's a whole process that we do. We notify them. When we first started in Worcester, it was a 2.5 square mile area. We did total eradication. We notified all the people, and that's what we had to do because it was such a heavy infestation. We had to reduce the amount there. So in 2.5 square miles, it's in the Greendale neighborhood. If you ever get a chance to go into the Greendale neighborhood of Worcester, you'll see that there aren't a lot of trees. There's a lot of very young trees in there. That's because unfortunately, that area was primarily Norway maple, which in itself is an invasive species. You can't buy Norway maple anymore. But that whole neighborhood was primarily Norway maple, which is very, very invasive tree species. And that reason why that is they had a tornado in 1953 that wiped that neighborhood out. And they replanted it with Norway maple. But unfortunately, Asian longhorn beetle loves Norway maple. So when we came in, we had to take them all down. Pretty much every tree we came to was infested. So we just said, whether it's infested or not, in that 2.5 square, we actually wanted to do 5 square miles. And it got so politically charged that they didn't let us finish the 5 square miles. And actually, we're paying the price of that now because we could have... been a lot further along than we are right now because we weren't allowed to take the trees that we wanted to take from the start.
Just one more question about the Asian longhorn beetle. So do you think the appropriate approaches and methods are being used to prevent another introduction from its native range?
Well, that all started back in, I think it was 1989 or 87 or 89, they did ISPM 15. I don't know if anybody had talked to that. It's the laws that require anything that comes into this country has to either be heat treated or fumigated. Unfortunately, the inspectors, the APHIS inspectors that have to follow up on that, we only inspect 2% of what comes into this country. You've seen all those container ships with all the big cargo things on them. So 2% of what comes into this country gets inspected. That's because there just isn't enough staff. And if you're familiar with what's going on right now, that's going to be even less gets inspected. So more and more stuff comes in. And then China doesn't allow us to go over to their ports to guarantee that they're actually doing what they're supposed to do. It's very complicated. So, and yes, we still intercept Asian longhorn beetle coming into the country. It's still being intercepted in the ports. Although, you know, they know what to look for now. They're very adept. You know, USDA is on top of it. You know, everything that that says on the manifesto, what's coming in, wood packing material, they try to look at it as much as they can. A lot of it is actually being shipped in plastic now or other materials because, you know, China's trying to work with us. They know we're their biggest trade partner, so they're trying to work with us. But every once in a while, it comes in wood packing material, and it gets, you know, it gets shipped over here and still has, and it's not just Asian longhorn beetles, all these other invasive wood-boring pests, bark beetles, wood borers, they're still coming in here. And it's not just us, it's all over the world because, you know, we're a world trade. You know, trade is everywhere now. So, you know, Europe has all kinds of problems, and Africa, there's all kinds of stuff being shipped into Africa now that's non-native to there, or South America, it's everywhere.
Has our new administration improved or hindered the process of eradicating invasive species, or does it have anything to do with it?
Federal administration?
Sure.
Well, to be politically correct, we don't know yet. You know, right now we're if you're familiar what we're on continuing resolution. That means we're at the same budget, and we've been on continuing resolution for a long time now. So our budget, even though, you know, we need more money, it's the same. And you know, we're actually at the stage right now where we're renegotiating. I'll give you an example: Asian longhorn beetle, the money that APHIS gives us in Worcester, and they said put in for the same amount of money because we're still on continuing resolution. But if you look at and it was just on the news this morning, what is proposed for the Department of Agriculture, the Federal Department of Agriculture, a 28% cut. That's huge. I mean, we were thinking like 2%. Like we took a 2% cut from the Forest Service last year, and that was huge to us. 28%. That's just unheard of. But it still has to, you know, go through Congress and all that. I'm sure that'll. But even, you know, a 10% cut is just astronomical to deal with the problems that are out there. And it's not just, you know, the stuff that I deal with, you know, all the different agricultural commodities, the things that actually that happen in this country and all over the world. So that's just my opinion for what it's worth. Yeah.
So what exactly does the fungus that helps eliminate the gypsy moth, what exactly does it do to kill it?
When it sporulates, so all, you know, any fungal pathogen has spores. That's how it spreads. When it sporulates and goes out into the air, it gets on the insect's body. And basically, when the spores get on the insect's body, the outside of it, it eats away at the insect's body. So when you see it's all like wilted and watery, and it's kind of gross. It eats away at the body. But it's been so dry, and the soil has dried up, so the fungal spores have dried up. More, you know, the good thing about that fungus, the entomophaga fungus, is they have they're called resting spores. So the spores can sit there for many, many years in the soil, just not be active. But then once you get the right conditions, it'll sporulate again. So hopefully that's what's happening now. The soil, there's lots of soil moisture out there, so we're hoping it won't help us this year, but in the future, it'll kick back in again.
I was wondering if you've ever experienced any unexpected consequences from using biocontrol to control invasive species.
That's a great question. So I myself have not, but going back to gypsy moth, when they first started thinking about biocontrols, they released everything they could find from Japan, from Europe, and they brought it here. And I don't know if you know the calosoma beetle, if you heard of the calosoma beetle. So a lot of our native Lepidopterum are butterflies and moths. A lot of them actually got eradicated by the things that were brought into this country to fight against gypsy moths. So a lot, you know, we would have a lot more colorful moths, native moths and butterflies out there now if it wasn't for what was brought in here to this country back in the early 1900s. That's because they didn't study it. They didn't think at the time, okay, does it affect any of the native insects that are here? So that's not done anymore. For us to actually release one of these biocontrols, it takes years and years of study. And all that work actually is done here in state. The USDA has a lab on the Cape called the Otis Methods Lab down in Bourne, or Falmouth, on the Bourne-Falmouth line. And they have a quarantine lab there, and they do all that study there. Everything's in quarantine. Anything that they're going to release for a biocontrol. It gets studied for many, many years. It's called choice feeding study. So anything possible native that could be here that insect could feed on, it gets tested to see if it feeds on it. So I'll give you an example. Leracobius nigrinus, the one for the hemlock woolly adelgid, they tested that for almost 10 years before it was released. Thanks.